every class is a little different. I think last week's class, we went over the deep end because I went a little mystical on the class. And it's not necessarily always the intention of getting mystical on Rashi. But that's sometimes some of the classes, and sometimes it's a little different. Tonight's a little bit more of like a holistic understanding of Rashi and skills, a few skill building. Okay? So I want to start with an introduction of the Ramban to the Torah. I want to use this to give us a little bit of a perspective and direction in terms of how we study Rashi, how we study the Chumash. So I'd like to read that together. The Ramban writes, and it's my translation, so you know, I'll do my best to explain what I mean. So the Ramban is in the middle of his introduction into the Torah, explaining, you know, how Hashem communicated the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu. And he said, he was first informed of the manner in which heaven and earth were created, and all of their hosts. Namely, the manner by which each being was formed, celestial and terrestrial alike. That means the malachim, and also anything on earth. As well as all of the phenomenon stated in prophecy, such as the matter of the chariots, in the description of Yechezkel, that Yechezkel, Hanavi, saw the sky open and he saw Hashem's throne and the angels above him and how many wings they had, and he saw some chashmal, which is some type of malachim flying back and forth, a whole vision. Moshe Rabbeinu was informed of all those aspects of creation and the matter of secrets of the creation, meaning the secrets of how Hashem created the world, and all that was known in tradition to the scholars of the ages, with a thorough knowledge of the nature of the elements, the organic life form, living form, and human beings. All these were told to Moshe, including their essence, their ability, their creations, and their weaknesses. All is written in the Torah, either explicitly or by hint. So the Ramban testifies to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was taught everything there is to know about reality. Moshe Rabbeinu did not only learn what we call, let's say, the Torah and mitzvos, you know, the body of text or the mitzvos and so on. Moshe Rabbeinu actually learned about all the natural phenomena and the supernatural phenomena. Everything. And not only that, everything is in the Torah. So if we were to know how to decode the Torah, if we had that wisdom of how to break up letters into different variations, all of the different understandings, levels of knowledge and comprehension that we had in the Torah, we would be able to extract from the Torah everything. That's what the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot. The Mishnah says, "Hafachba v'hafachba dechulaba." Turn it over and turn it over. Keep going over it, like mull it over, as they say. You know, chew it over, go over it, and go over it, and squeeze all of it that you can out of it. Anything that you can do with your mind to extract from it, it's all in there. Everything that you understand from it by applying the principles of learning to the Torah, you can actually apply them to the text and arrive at the truth of reality. If you're sensitive to the truth and you listen carefully to what the Torah is saying, applying the skills that are taught to Moshe and tradition and so on, then you can actually extract everything from the Torah. Of course, we don't have all these secrets today. We have a lot of secrets today. We know a lot about the Torah. We know a lot about how to break up the Torah. We have the Zohar, we have Kabbalists and so on, but essentially, there's a lot that is lost. Moshe Rabbeinu also didn't pass everything over that he was taught. But that's pretty much a different topic. The reason I bring it to our class, why am I bringing it tonight? The reason I'm sharing it tonight is because when we study, just taking one step away and then I'll come back to the Rashi. When we study, for example, the Talmud, the Gemara, we are engaging in the portal back to the traditional, when I say traditional, I don't mean as opposed to modern. I mean the tradition, the tradition's way, the Mesorah way of breaking back into the Torah. So we have, if we understand, we have the rabbinic understanding, Chazal's understanding into Torah, then we can, that's our portal to coming back to understanding how the Torah was given. There's no other way to understand the Torah as it was intended by Hashem. We have no other way. We can't think that we can open a text and understand, we can understand a simple reading, but there's no way for us to initiate a new channel of understanding of the Torah without going back to the Mesorah, the tradition of generation to generation of tools of application and the knowledge that was associated with the text. How can we do that on our own? We won't really truly get into the spirit and the understanding of the Torah. So that's what we're doing when we're learning the Gemara. In that vein, that is what we are doing when we're learning Rashi. When we analyze the Chumash, and we look at the text, we look at the Psukim carefully, and we learn how to read the text, well, we are, and we learn the answers to those questions, we're doing very much like what the rabbis have written in the Talmud, if you will. We are studying the text and we're looking for the spirit of the text. We're trying to capture the essence of the text. We're trying to understand the messages of the text. This way, that way, the nuances, what's intended, how does that compare to something else we know? It's actually, we're engaged in Torah study when we're doing that. The reason I bring up the Ramban is because everything is in the Torah. So if we know how to, we're not going to know how to decode letters. We're not going to know that. I have no idea how to do that. But there's no way I'm going to be able to ever probably even learn it. I don't know. I'm not sure how you do that. But what I do know is we can use our skills to break down the text and understand the spirit of the text and the hidden messages in the text. And they're written in Rashi. But we want to learn what are those skills that are applied. So that's why I bring in the Ramban. Okay? So just wanted to use that as a portal. That's how what we're coming to. I made a promise 2 weeks ago, and tonight I intend on keeping my promise, that sharing with you 10 questions you can ask on how to study Rashi. Okay? This is it. What might be Rashi's question? Now, obviously, the goal here is not necessarily to know what is Rashi's question. The goal is, how do we ask a question like Rashi would ask a question? Whether we ask the question Rashi asked on the text or not, it's great if we ask Rashi's question and we can really pat ourselves on the back and say, good job, you asked Rashi's question, fantastic. No one other than Rashi asked that question, quoted from the Medrash, amazing, right? But we want to know how to really learn Chumash and we want to know how to read a text properly. And these are, if you will, it's not my own, it's adapted from another document that I have, which I don't know its origin, its author, but I have one from my teaching in school and so on, and I adapted it. These are basically the sort of skills that we want to apply to a text. When we learn a pasuk, what are the sort of questions we want to look for? And our parsha, actually, is a great place to apply these skills. The beginning of our parsha specifically. You know that it's quite amazing, actually, if you think about it, that Sefer Bereshit is studied in the lower grades in school. Right? Parshas Toldos, our parsha, is basically where a third grader begins learning. Okay? Third grade, or maybe the end of second grade, the beginning of third grade is learning. That's the age that Rashi intended on teaching when he wrote his Perush. The age of 5 to 7, right? Now obviously, I don't mean to in any way lower your intelligence and ridicule your ability to understand or anyone's ability. And Rashi wrote for someone as simple as a 5 or 7 year old, but it's also packed with the depth that every adult can learn for the, you know, for all their lives. And these parshiyot are so apropos. They have literally the skills that you need to start learning Chumash. Okay, so let's look at the 10 questions that we're going to apply tonight to the Psukim. We're going to do it tonight. Okay? Number one, are there extra words? Number two, are there repeated words? Number three, are there unexpected words? Would you expect the Torah to say something more simple? Remember, like in Parashat Vayera, when we studied Vayera, so it uses a word for what were we studying? Does anyone remember what we learned in Parashat Vayera? Vayigash. Good. It says that Vayigash Avraham Vayomar Ha'afti Spet Tzadiki Moshe. Very good. Avram drew close to God, and the question we asked was, why does it say the word Vayigash? And all of a sudden, Rashi goes on a whole, you know, hunt through the Tanakh to find the meaning of the word Vayigash. Very good. So, are there any unexpected words? Number four, are there words you've rarely or never seen before? Now, obviously, if you've never studied the Chumash, every word is a word you've never seen before. You know, but for those of us that are a little more familiar with common words in Chumash, and I would be glad to share with you, by the way, a list of common words by their most frequency. There's a list of words in Chumash, let's say, that appear more than 5,000 times, the ones that appear more than 1,000 times, the ones that appear more than 500 times, and it's divided into those categories. I'd be glad to share that list with you if you'd like it. I'd be happy to have a document. But are there any words that you've never seen? So a word that, you know, Vayomer, obviously it appears in the Chumash more than 5,000 times. Right? But a word like Tispe, Ha'af Tispe, Tzadiki Moshe, that's a less common word. The verb is common. You know, Sof, or the word Sof, or Yasaf. Though that verb is common, but the word is not too common. Okay? Fine. So are there any unexpected words? And fifth is a word missing. Sometimes it's the pasuk will actually skip a word, and you don't know who's the subject, for example. It'll say Vayomer, and it won't say who said what, and then you might understand the verse differently. And lastly, sixth, is the wording congruous. For example, if it's talking about tzadikim in the plural, why is the singular verb form used, for example? So then there's something to talk about. Well, it's incongruous. Okay, so what I've done is you've noticed probably, I've bolded the section that relates to words. I bolded the word words, and I've underlined the unusual things. Okay, and then we have about the subject. Is the subject repeated? We're going to have that tonight. See if you can find it. Number eight, is the subject well connected to the previous or following subject? All of a sudden, the pasuk was talking about one thing. The pasuk jumps to something else. That's a question. What is the connection between A and B? And lastly, is the result intelligible? At the end of the day, when you read the pasuk, does it make sense to you? Or is there something that's still bothering you about the subject? So these are pretty, if you will, basic, but they're categorized quite easily. It's extra, it's repeated, it's unexpected, you've never seen it before, it's missing, is it congruous? The idea about the words, the subject, and the result. And now you're going to get to work, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to give you some activity right now. We're going to read through the first four psukim of the parasha. I have some pens over here on the table. And I'm going to ask you, as we're going to read through the psukim, the translation is here. Actually, we won't read through because you have the translation there. I'll let you read it. The translation for the first four psukim is in front of you. Try to circle or underline or star or whatever you like. I suggest working in partners, actually, if you make it a little bit more exciting. You can be partners, okay. Work in partners, work with your spouse or your friend or whomever, and try to find as many questions that were asked 1 through 10 in this text as you can, and number them. So if you find the number 5, circle it and put the number 5 next to it. And let's see how many things we can come up with. How many sort of questions would Rashi ask on these psukim? Any questions on the instructions? Does everyone understand
like
what to do?
Like number two.
Number two.
Are there repeated words?
Yes, I'm sorry, it's an error.
Okay.
Are there repeated words?
And
then?
Does the result intelligible, or is the result? Yes. Sorry. Is the result? Just to make sure.
I think all these pens should be working.
We have to find, so if it's number, are there extra words at number one, three, number one?
Put the number one. Circle it and put a number one. Try to find as many things as you can in that area and put the number next to it.
Yeah,
and then why does it get this is Parsha.
I would say, I would think it should say, here the offspring. It doesn't say, like, gave birth to Yitzchak. These are the. I mean, then it's like, this is repeated. This is the first. I think I understand this one.
How's it going, everybody? Too busy to answer. Okay, that's good.
So, what number did that bring? No, the subject is repeated. It's not the subject. But it's
the subject in the way like of a noun. The subject is more like math. The idea is repeated, sort of.
Is the result intelligible? No. Well.
Very well.
I don't get it.
We need a Russian translation. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
So, what is this to first?
I made a mistake in the English and the translation for Pasuk 22. Where it says in English 22, it's actually it's actually the continuation of 21. So you don't actually have the translation for 22, and I apologize for that. But we can read that together in a few moments, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
there on the hall. How does that happen? Do you feel that people consider extra? Okay, another error that I have in my translation, and I apologize. In 21, Isaac entreated Hashem opposite his wife. Okay?
Oh,
he entreated his wife opposite Hashem. Isaac entreated Hashem opposite his wife. Got it? Sorry about this. Sorry.
But
here, this is also yeah. So it's like, let's say, plural, plural, singular, subject, okay, should we entreat? Entreat means to pray to God. To beseech God.
Opposite his wife.
Okay, well, we'll spend two more minutes on this, and then we'll work together.
She was in one corner, and God was in another corner. It's been opposite. Opposite his wife.
Are you making any progress here? Yeah.
Okay, why? What the word is this?
I mean,
opposite his wife.
Is that a common
word? He was in this corner, and she was in opposite. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's collect our thoughts. Just some. Rashi would be so proud. Okay. Okay. Okay.
So what's our, does anyone think they have the earliest point to make on the first verse? Is there something, what's the earliest thing you want to say about the very, very first pasuk? What do you think you have the earliest critique, if you will, or question on the first pasuk? On pasuk 19, Chaf Yotet.
Yeah.
Someone think they have the very earliest, the very first thing to say.
No reason to say Abraham begot Isaac if it says Isaac is the son of Abraham.
Okay. So it says Isaac is the son of Abraham. Abraham begot Isaac.
There's no reason to say that.
So the second phrase is repetitive.
Yeah.
So that would be a subject. Subject, I just meant by subject that maybe it's written somewhere else in the Torah, or maybe earlier, a few psukim before. Repeated word, repeated subject. We don't have to get stuck on the words. Okay. Is there anything else in that pasuk? Does anyone else have anything to say about pasuk yutet? So clearly, that's extra. Elizabeth, yeah.
The vav, the beginning.
What about the vav?
Why can't I just start Ela?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So definitely.
And something is connected to
right.
something.
Right. Right. The Ela. Yeah. We have a general rule that whenever we're familiar with this rule, that when it says the word Ela, it means this is brand new, starting from here forward. When it says Ve'ela, it's a continuation. Mm-hmm. So that urges the question, and that would be a what? What would you call that? Where would you put that under?
Extra
word, maybe. It's like an extra word,
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Okay. So yeah, well, you have to look back and say, well, what did we just finish with, and why is the parsha starting with Ve'ela? Mm-hmm. Excellent question.
Oh,
I would definitely say that's definitely the first one. Anything else in the first pasuk? Does anyone else have something? Yes.
Number five is, are any words missing?
Yes.
It doesn't say, what are the Torahs of Yitzchak, so that's missing.
Yeah.
Okay, so very good. So the pasuk says, these are, according to Rashi, the word toldot means the offspring. So that's how Rashi understands the word toldot. So if you understand the word toldot as such, then clearly it says, these are the offspring of Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham begot Yitzchak, and then like in Parshas Noach, where it says, Elo toldos Noach, and then it goes on to some other subject, it tells you about Noach's, character, and then it comes back to the children, as opposed to, and over here the same thing, where are the children of, these are the children of Yitzchak ben Avraham. Well, where are the children of Yitzchak ben Avraham? Mm-hmm. So Rashi asks that question, because Rashi understands that toldot means children. Others understand that it's more like the chronicles of. These are the chronicles of Yitzchak ben Avraham. And then that makes sense. Okay, so Yitzchak got married at 40, married Rebecca, and so on. So it depends on how you understand Toldo. So if you understand like Rashi, which is, I have here the I botched up the Art Scroll translation, but it's the Art Scroll translation, they understand Rashi as offspring, so therefore it is a question. Yes?
Would that be six? Is that congruent?
So that would be a missing words, right? Call it what you will. It's
okay.
Just for our identity, It's missing words.
Okay.
There's something else. Toldot.
Yes.
Is very important, I think, in Judaism because it's the carrying on. Whatever you do is going to be reflected in your life and in the toldot. So it's good to know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So we can follow them later on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, Donnie.
What does that mean? I mean, it sounds like it's plural, but shouldn't it say, and this is the offspring?
These.
I mean, why and these? It sounds like there's more than one.
Right. Okay. Yeah, well, when you're talking about like the toldot, if you're talking like Rashi, it means offspring, means the children. So it would be referring to Yaakov and Esav in the Parsha.
Yeah.
That's exactly how Rashi says it. Yaakov and Esav that are written in the Parsha. Or, so Rashi might be bothered by the plural, the Ela toldot. Or it just means the chronicles, the events of the life of Yitzchak ben Avraham. Okay, let's move to the next pasuk.
Oh, one other thing.
Oh, yes.
I would also say, are there repeated words, number two?
Yes. What is
Abraham, Abraham, and Yitzhak. Abraham is repeated side by side.
Right. Yes. So you read the pasuk this way.
And Yitzhak and Yitzhak.
Right. Ela told of Yitzhak and Abraham. Abraham holy did Yitzhak.
Right. It's like, so you have extra words and repeated words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That's true.
So you have one and two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What about the order?
See, if you learn, I'm sorry. If you learn not like Rashi, if you learn like Rashi that toldot means offspring, so then you have two questions on the pasuk. Not, maybe three. Number one, how is this a continuation of before? Ve'ela. This is a new topic. Mm-hmm. Secondly, why does it repeat Avram holy the Yitzhak? If it already said that he was Yitzhak ben Avram. And thirdly, where are these kids that we're talking about that Yitzhak had? But if you learn, unlike Rashi, that Toldot just means the chronicles of the life of Yitzhak, so then everything makes sense. It's a continuation because the previous part was basically the chronicles of Avram. Now we're in the chronicles of Yitzhak. And the first part of the pasuk just means these are the chronicles of Yitzhak. A, Abraham begot Isaac. Secondly, Yitzhak got married. Thirdly, they had children. No problem. And you don't have the third question of where are these kids? So Rashi really sticks himself into a problem by saying toldot means the children of. But Rashi insists that that's what the words toldot mean. So
it's out of order.
Other places.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, where Toldos is mentioned.
But it's out of order then, because if it's that way, then you're talking about, then he gets married, takes a wife. Right? First, they talk about the children, then
right.
he takes a wife.
Backtracks. No. According to Rashi, it backtracks and tells you about how the children came to be. See, Rashi, and this is, thank you very much. And it's back, it's a good saying, like, these are the children of Isaac. Okay, let's take a step back. Where did these children come from? What was the context in which Rebecca conceived Yaakov and Esau? This is the context. According to Rashi, that's very important. And this is where we now take a deeper level look at Rashi. Ladies and gentlemen, understand this point, it's so beautiful. Rashi is not only teaching pshat. If Rashi was just teaching simple pshat, let's say like the Ibn Ezra, another major commentary in the Chumash, so he would prefer to learn toldot as the chronicles, and then you avoid all the questions in the first pasuk and you move on. But Rashi is sticking with a definition of the word toldot so that he digs deeper into the back part of the story. It's not just the chronicles of Yitzhak. The Torah is not like a history book, so to say. The Torah is telling us, we need to know where Yaakov and Esau came from. How did the conception of Yaakov and Esau come to be? It came through tefillah. That's how Yaakov and Esau came to be. And this is what happened to Rivka when she was pregnant. And this is how they were born, and this is where they went. And that's important to know about the children of Yitzhak. According to Rashi, the Torah is telling a very deep story about the context of how they were born. Mm-hmm. According to the other Mefarshim, it's not that meaningful. Why would I care so much? I mean, it is important, but how's it so like magical and important and deep to know what happened? Okay, so he prayed, she gave birth. I mean, but why is it so important for the Torah to tell us right away? It's lacking that depth that Rashi is coming to tell us.
It's like he's setting it up.
Do you hear my point? Do you hear my point that Rashi gives a pshat of toldot, meaning that it's the offspring, and Rashi's putting himself in a difficult place in order to get to something much, if you will, much more meaningful, much deeper, which is what is the context in which Yaakov and Esau were born, to understand who the offspring are. For us to understand who the offspring are, you must understand. That's what the Torah is saying. If you want to understand Yaakov and Esau, you can't understand them without going into how Yitzchak married Rivka and how she conceived. Yeah, you have to go into those details to really understand who these children are. That's a very profound message that Rashi is sharing with us by learning Toldot the way he does. Let's go to the next pasuk. So, any stabs at the next pasuk? Vayihi Yitzchak ben Arba'im Shana. Yitzchak was 40 years old. Bekachto et Rivka. Bat Betuel Ha'arami Mipadan Aram. Achok Laban Ha'arami Lo Li'isha. Anyone want to think of what is the very first thing we encounter in this pasuk?
Well, I would ask the question, how old was Rebecca?
Okay. So, if I could turn your question around a little bit, I would say there's missing words in the pasuk. And Yitzchak was 40 years old. Well, how about Rivka? How old was Rivka when she married Yitzchak? Why isn't the Torah telling that story? What else? Did anyone else see anything else in this pasuk?
Yeah. Well, why is the wife for himself? Why is that all the way at the end? It should be right there.
It should say that Yitzchak took Rivka as a wife for himself, and she was the daughter, and so on and so forth. It seems the Torah wants to get our attention by putting in some extra words about who she really was, her background, immediately before it emphasizes that he married her as a wife. Yeah. Why? Why is that so important? Did anyone see anything else in that pasuk that might be repetitive, extra?
Well, it's important. That's important to know what kind of woman she was. I mean, where did she grow up? He's going to marry somebody, but it's a very important to know what kind of life she was brought.
Okay, but
around.
Here I ask you the question, Al. I have a question for you. We just finished Parsha Chayei Sarah last week. Yeah, and in that Parsha, there's a very long story of Eliezer finding Rivka, and it's repeated twice, a whole huge episode. We know very well who Rivka is.
That's right.
So, the question I have, and I think also Rashi asked this question, the question is, we already know who she is, and whose daughter she was, and whose sister she was. Why is the Torah telling us that again now, when Yitzchak's married? And it begs the question like Donnie asked, and why is it smack in the middle? Well, here you come back to what Rashi is saying. If you learn that Rashi's approach to the Parsha is to understand, if you want to understand the children, you have to understand the context of who Rivka and Yitzchak are. So of course the Torah wants to tell us who Rivka is right now. If you learn not like Rashi, that toldot doesn't mean offspring, it means chronicles, so then you have a question. Why is the Torah saying that she's the daughter of Betuel and the sister of Laban? I know that already. But if you learn like Rashi, maybe there's something special the Torah wants to emphasize about her. And there is. The Torah emphasizes, according to Rashi, the Torah is coming to say, look at this young woman. She grew up in a house, her father was an Aramean. And in the Torah language, that's to emphasize that he wasn't an ethical person. He was a Rasha. And Laban, her brother, was also a Rasha. Her father was a Rasha, her brother was a Rasha, and yet Rivka, and then there's the punchline, Donnie, at the end, Rivka married Yitzchak as a wife. Amazing. This woman who grew up with Betuel and Laban, she married Yitzchak? That's incredible. I mean, the Torah wants to emphasize the context. That's amazing. That's if you learn like Rashi. Again, if you learn like Rashi, that toldot means offspring, so then you can understand why the Torah is saying this. If you just understand the chronicles, then it's repetitive. So Rashi lost in the first game, if you will. In the first pasuk, Rashi lost 3-0. But in this pasuk, Rashi's winning so far, because Rashi's explaining the context.
So the next question is, how can this woman be so good that he would want to take
She must have been such a woman who knew there's two types of kids. Either you learn how to be like your parents, or you learn how you don't want to be like your parents. And Rivka learns how she doesn't want to be, she'll be exactly the opposite of Laban and Betuel.
Like right? Abraham and his dad.
Exactly. And that's a special thing. So, we are 5 minutes away from our end of class. I don't want to belabor the point, but you'll notice as you go through the psukim, if you apply these tools to the psukim, you will be astounded by the depth of the way you're learning the psukim, and you'll be so satisfied when you study Rashi. and you'll see really what Rashi is bothered by and the depth that Rashi offers. Okay? I want to skip down to the bottom of the page to close up for this evening and show you an example from Rashi to Pasuk Chavtet. So this is a few psukim ahead. We all know the story. Esav and Yaakov were born. Esav was a hunter. He wasn't the most ethical person himself, much like his uncle and grandfather. And Yaakov is cooking at home. Avram Avinu died. Rashi says, Esav comes home. And it says in Pasuk Chavtet, we're going to read it together, Vayazed Yaakov Naziv. Yaakov was making a chalet. Vayavo Esav min hasadeh. And Esav came from the field, Vehu Ayef, which literally means he is tired. Okay, don't mention that word in this class. Okay, Pasuk Lamed. Pasuk Lamed. Vayomer Esav el Yaakov. Then Esav says to Yaakov, Hal itenina min ha'adom ha'adom azeh. Please pour that very red soup down my throat. Ki ayef anochi. Because I am tired.
Hadom, hadom is repeated.
Hadom, hadom. This very red, this very reddish food. Yeah, it's a repetitive word. Yeah.
Why does he say
red
that?
Red is often associated with sin, by the way.
With Esav also, as well. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
Why does he say halitaini? Why doesn't he say just
feed
me? Or feed me? And he says pour it down my throat?
Great. Rashi says, hal itini. Hal itini means it's when you want your, I don't know much about camels or anything like that, but when you want your camels to eat and they haven't eaten much, the Gemara in Shabbos describes that you stuff the food down the camel's throat. So you open the mouth wide and you stuff the food in. I don't know why you exactly, in what circumstances you do that, but that's the word that Esav used. He said, open my mouth and just pour that stuff down my throat. Halitaini. You know, just pour it down my throat. That'd be, why? Ki ayef anochi. Because I am tired. And the obvious question, there's many questions on the pasuk. One question is,
why is he tired?
Well, that's one question.
We know why
is he tired? But there's another question. The word ayef is repeated twice. The Torah told us in the previous pasuk, and I bolded the text.
Yeah.
Just for us to see the word. It says he came from the field and he was tired. Mm-hmm. And then it says he told Yaakov, feed me because I'm tired. Well, why does the Torah have to report to us then in the previous pasuk that he was tired if Esav himself is going to tell us that he's tired? Mm-hmm. Good question. That's Rashi's question. Therefore, Rashi says, and the Rashi's in Rashi font at the bottom, Vehu Ayef, referring back to the first reference of the word ayef on the pasuk, says Rashi, biritzicha, with murder. Ayef means, does not mean here in the first pasuk, he was tired. Because later he says, look, he was like sprawled out on the bench and he said, I'm so tired, just pour that food down my throat, I'm even too tired to lift a spoon. That's what Esav was saying in the second pasuk. Well, in the first pasuk, the Torah doesn't have to tell us he's tired, because we already know he's tired. So what is the first one? Says Rashi, ayef must mean something else in the first pasuk. Ayef means that he was exhausted because, not because he was physically tired, but because he was pursuing murder. On that day, he was out killing. He was out killing people, he was out killing animals, he was hunting, and his soul, if you will, was exhausted from the bear of the activity, not physically tired, but he was worn out because of he was at the end of the line because he was so unethical, so immoral on that day. That's what the Torah is saying. Yes, he came from the field and he was thoroughly saturated with immorality when he arrived to Yaakov. That's what the Torah is saying, according to Rashi. Because why would the Torah repeat ayef? Yeah. So, I just want to finish my comment, sorry. So just based on the fact that the word is repeated, Rashi understands that the first time the Torah is saying it's something much deeper. Okay? I'm sorry. Yes, please.
Isn't that much deeper because Esav is always giving kind of, he always has this personality, being the more aggressive one and the more violent one. But is it implying, though, that that is still not his true nature? Is that why it's so draining on him? Because if it were easy for him, if that was his natural nature, wouldn't it not be so strenuous?
You're killing 50 people, it's not easy. But I feel like for a barbarian or a Viking or something, it may not be so strenuous. It may be enjoyable. Right, right. It does still show that there's this different. That's, I mean, what you're adding is an additional insight on the pasuk, and definitely, I mean, we definitely know about Esau, if I can add and compliment to what you're saying, is that 8, we know about Esau, that Yitzchak saw tremendous potential in Esau. Mm-hmm. And he certainly, Yitzchak was not, even though he was blind, quote unquote, but he wasn't blinded by the fact that there was something about Esau, you know, that he really could excel. Yitzchak was right in that regard. And it's true, Esau basically pursued things that diverted him from his potential. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't, you know, born in Russia and that was it.
If those two things are in the inverse, it can be terrible on a positive thing. It's like his user, you know, it's kind of like something flipped in him or something happened.
Yes.
It all of a sudden took all this massive potential and wonderful traits. It's nice for men to be masculine and aggressive, you know, and it's, these can all be really strong traits, but it's like something that twisted along the way.
Yes, and that's what the words Ayyev imply over here.
About Isaac, he had eyes to see and didn't see his son being an evil person, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that why he went? He was made blind.
Why?
Because he didn't have eyes to see.
Yeah. Well, Yitzchak, according so one understanding is that Yitzchak was the way Chazal explain is that, you know, allegorically they explain that he was blinded by the tears of the angels at the Akedah, which basically might mean that he might mean that Yitzchak saw the mercy that the Malachim were crying to Hashem, how could you kill Yitzchak? So he was so impassioned by that plea of the Malachim to Hashem that he could, for the rest of his life, he saw the merciful direction and approach with everyone. And even with an Esav, he was, quote-unquote, blind. It, you know, that's what how Chazal understands.
But literally, physically blind.
Physically, he was blind, that Rashi says, because, if you look in the Pesukim carefully, because Esav married idolatrous wives who used to burn incense to Avodah Zarah, and it blinded him. That's where Rashi understands the juxtaposition of the phrase that he was blind next to the fact that Esav married wives that upset Yitzchak and Rivka. To conclude, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to have to cut it here, is that you can really build a thirst, if you will, for the true understanding of the Pesukim by asking these questions and not jumping to the Rashi. By really getting bothered by the questions, seeing how many issues, if you will, are with the Pesukim, and what direction is the Pesukim really taking. And then when you learn Rashi, you realize Rashi's not only teaching simple pshat. Rashi is trying to lead us, guide us by the hand through the teachings of Chazal, to bring us to an understanding of the spirit of the text, what the Torah is trying to teach us about Yaakov and Esau. That they're like how they're when Rivka conceived them, you know, how what the context was, who was Rivka, who was a Yitzchak, who was an Esav, you know, how Esav was turned, and to really dig into those details so that we can understand really the true picture, and that is really what Rashi's out to do. It's like the depth of the pshat, if you will. And that's why the Ramban is built off Rashi. Because that's the Ramban's direction as well, is the depth of the pshat. That's what we mean by depth of the pshat. It's not just a superficial understanding. It's to give the whole character analysis, if you will, the whole context. In this case, it's a character analysis. In another context, it's to understand the background and what it's all about. That's what Rashi's coming to do, the depth of the pshat. And we can do that by asking the simple but direct and clear questions on the Pesukim, and then learning Rashi and really, you know, appreciating the depth of what Rashi is saying. Okay, thank you, everybody.